everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. Got a roundtable today, two of the standards for me, and both are always great on this podcast, and I appreciate their time. James Andrew Miller, of course, is the best-selling author of books on CAA, ESPN, Saturday Night Live. He's also the host of the popular podcast Origins, and always great when it comes to ESPN stuff. John Oran is the sports media reporter for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. And we have a full conversation, full roundtable here on a lot of ESPN issues, including the upcoming layoffs, the re-signing of ESPN president John Skipper, why ESPN is getting into Snapchat for SportsCenter. Talk a little bit about Mike Greenberg's new show and whether he can be destination viewing. Scott Van Pelt re-signing. Fox being in the middle of some interesting news involving global soccer rights and bribes and much more on what is, I think, maybe about an 80-minute conversation on sports media. You guys seem to really like this kind of stuff, and so we'll keep doing it. John Oran and Jim Miller on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, and as promised, we are joined by Jim Miller, the well-known and famous author of multiple books, including on ESPN, CAA, Saturday Night Live, also the host of the smash hit Origins podcast. He is the darling of my podcast network right now, Cadence 13. And John Oran, of course, is the media writer for the Sports Business Daily and the Sports Business Journal, and you have seen his work all around. I will point out before I welcome these guys that Jim Miller often does the Bill Simmons podcast with Brian Curtis and Bill Simmons. I mean, he is a major figure on the podcast circuit. For him to come down off the mountaintop to this little podcast.
Oh, my God.
We really appreciate. Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right. Well, let's start with this. And there's actually a serious and sober topic, and it sucks, but it is the reality. I'm going to start with you, Jim, and then you, John. I reported, maybe it was last week now at this point, that ESPN layoffs will exist. I think you guys have no, I mean, it's sort of been out there for a long time that layoffs are coming. What wasn't out there were numbers. And based on my reporting, the numbers will be more than 100. They will hit throughout ESPN in different capacities, executive branch, on-air talent, specifically a lot of it, or I shouldn't say a lot of it, but certainly SportsCenter will be hit. Some technology people for sure, producers. It's just going to run the gamut. The layoffs are expected to be finished by the end of the week after Thanksgiving. It is possible as we tape this on Wednesday, November 15th, that maybe even some people have been told that that they're going to be laid off. It absolutely sucks, obviously, during the holidays. And I think what's clear now is that this is the new normal for ESPN. This will not be the last layoffs at all. So, Jim, let me start with you. You know, you had written extensively on the last rounds of layoffs. That the round a couple of years ago with the 300-plus, that really sort of changed the soul of ESPN. A lot of long-time people. This last round, earlier this year, 100 front-facing people, so people like Jane McManus, Brett McMurphy, Andy Katz, Ed Werder, really big names, in my opinion, all people who did their job exceptionally well. And now we have another layoffs right before the start of 2018. Your top-line thoughts on where this company is in terms of this?
Well, look, after decades of invincibility, this is the new normal. And I think one of the reasons why it stings ESPN employees particularly strong. It's not to say that anybody gets laid off who gets laid off at another company. It doesn't affect them. Of course it does. But there's two factors. One is that I've often said that people don't date ESPN. They marry it because it's not in New York City. It's in Bristol, Connecticut. And so when you join the company, and by the way, let's remember that several years ago, there was a big push. They moved the magazine from New York City up to Connecticut. There was a big push to make sure that, you know, basically everyone possible, aside from the LA operation and other operations around the country that had to be there. Everybody was in Bristol. So what you do is you put your kids in school there and you move to central Connecticut. And so it's not like if you get laid off at CBS, you can, you know, go across town. And so I think that people really build their entire lives around working at ESPN. And the second thing is that, you know, before several years ago, let's face it, ESPN had such unbelievable growth and was such a growth story that the idea of when you talked about employment, the idea was, well, how many people are we hiring this year and how many new jobs and every, it, the idea, it just wasn't something, you know, these kinds of layoffs were not part of the firmament. I think it only happened on a significant basis maybe once before in their entire history. Yeah. So I think that this is something that people are really having to wrap their minds around. And to your point, you know, look, I think there's finally an understanding up there that this is not going to be the last round. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out as they transition their business. That was part of the reason why the 300 layoffs happened several years ago. It's a different kind of skill set, different kind of versatility that they wanted. They're trying to figure out now how quickly they can engineer some of these revenue enhancements and other additional revenue streams so they can possibly postpone future ones. But it's a, you know, it's a very difficult time.
John, again, I'll have you follow up on Jim. I'm not sure how much reporting you've done on this, but I think the thing that stands out to me and what Jim just said is it really does feel like a new normal. Having been in, and having worked at a place that has had, man, since I've worked there, 11, 12, 14 rounds of layoffs, you just feel like it's built into your work life, and you obviously hope it's not your number at this time. That was not, you know, that was something I never thought would happen to ESPN at a certain point. It was a destination job that people stayed for 20, 30 years, but that's just not the case anymore.
Yeah, I think Jim put it best in terms of, you know, it's almost like the Rust Belt, you know, people moving to an area where there are no other media jobs around there. And so, you know, where do you go? You have to uproot your family and move if you want to stay employed in the media business. But, I mean, if you want to look at this, I hate doing it, it's affecting people. But if you look at it in stark corporate terms, to me, this is, you know, ESPN grew so big. And it is so big, and now it's trying to pivot. And when you try to pivot, you end up with people that have skill sets that don't fit. You know, with you know, knowing technically everything about television when they're trying to pivot to digital is it makes it difficult. And you know, unless
my only question though is, John, you know, we're not Monday morning quarterbacking here because I think a lot of people said at the time. But if you have a workforce, and I know auto companies and Pharma did this and some tech companies as well. If you have a workforce that's doing X and you understand where the industry is going and it's going to need to do more of Y, why not take the time and
to retrain absolutely
and give a heads up to people and say, look, this is the way that we see the course of the business transitioning. These are the skill sets that you have now, but these are the skill sets that we're going to need later. And as a result, that disparity between the two of them, I mean, ESPN Campus, you know, why not throw night courses there? Why not throw workshops there? Why not throw, you know, instructors there that are going to transition people who are basically doing linear jobs into digital jobs because they're your home team. And so as a result, what's happened is you laid off a lot of people, 300 people several years ago, and they had certain skill sets, and those skill sets are not as valued anymore, and they're not as applicable. But then why not take those people? Look, I know a lot of those people who are laid off. They are really good people. They're smart people. And by the way, they obviously know how to learn because they learned 10 years before that. When things were going from videotape to others, I mean, there's other transitions that they had gone through. So my only point is, you know, I think sometimes there has to be a grander architecture and some real social and labor-intensive engineering to try and keep as many people as possible.
Yeah, without question, that there should have been more training. There could have been more training.
I mean, you get rid of those people, and then you just hire different people with different skill sets. Why couldn't those people have adapted?
I think that if you were to give truth serum to the ESPN executives, they would say, well, the digital people that they're hiring are much cheaper than the people that they have in television. And I think it actually would come down to that. I mean, they're Disney being a public company and all.
I want to ask...
Well, not to beat a dead horse, but you know what? I know a lot of those people, and by the way, we know this happened on the talent side. We know that there are, I don't want to embarrass anybody and mention names, but there are anchors who went to management and said, I know I'm making too much. Please don't lay me off. I'll take a lot less just to stay. And so why can't you do that for a producer who's let's say a producer's making, you know, 90 grand a year, a CP, or maybe they're making more. And you say, but you need to be moving to the digital space. And by the way, that digital job is only going to pay you 65 or 70. I mean, these are just arbitrary numbers. But I'm just saying, at least give people the opportunity to say, well, you know what? It's going to be less money, but I'm still going to have a job. I'm not going to have to leave my home in Connecticut. I'll still have health care for my family. There's a myriad of, you know, alternatives to just, okay, you're now a round hole in a square box. Goodbye, and we're going to now hire a cheaper square box.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing there, Jim, is I think a lot of the talents that you cite, you know, they have agents who are looking ahead and maybe seeing sort of the landscape 4, 5, 6 months out, and they make those calls to management. Management takes those calls. But I agree with you. You wish
the company has to be the agent. For
I agree. The in a certain sense, you hit it on the head. A $120,000 a year producer likely doesn't have an agent, so the company has to be the agent in that. How do you guys, John? I want to go to you, and then we'll go to Jim. How do you guys see, if you see any, parallel's not the right word, but there's sort of these dueling storylines. What do you read into John Skipper being re-signed and Scott Van Pelt being re-signed as we're sort of amidst the same news cycle as layoffs coming? I'll point out and give credit to Ryan Glasspiegel of The Big Lead, who reported this week that Skipper had... is about to re-sign a deal that will take him through 2021. From everything I heard, I think that deal has been done for a couple weeks. You know, it's sort of second or third hand, so I could be wrong on that. But it's just clear that Disney has made a decision, and he's heading forward with ESPN. And, you know, you can certainly debate whether that is a good decision, bad decision. Personally, I like John Skipper a lot. I think he cares about the right things. His tenure there, though, is well up for debate in terms of whether he's the right CEO. But beyond that, John Oren, how do you see – I mean, I realize you got to do business, but it's always weird to me – and ESPN, trust me, did not want the Skipper news out now because the optics suck on it. But it's always weird when you see, like, high-profile re-signings, you know, mixed in the same kind of time frame as layoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and you said it perfectly. The optics here – are pretty bad, but I do think that they're two different. I mean, you have to be able to separate them somewhat. Scott Van Pelt is the host of, you know, probably the most successful SportsCenter relaunch that they've had. Going on at midnight. He's somebody that is one of the probably top five talent. Would you put him in top three talent at ESPN?
I think at this point, given. Well, first of all, let's congratulate Mike Greenberg for helping Scott Van Pelt make a lot of money. Mike Greenberg raised the bar on that salary, and that's clearly why Scott Van Pelt get paid. He's top three to me. I mean, they have that one. You know, he's obviously multifaceted, but they have used his show, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. They're using his show as the standard by which the SportsCenter rebrands are supposed to be. So in that sense, just given the time frame, it's after games. I think he's easily in the three most important on-air figures for them at this point at the company.
So if we're going to agree he's top three, he's somebody you have to re-sign. I would suggest. And with Skipper, I'm actually curious to get your thoughts on this, Jim. My personal belief is that, you know, a year ago, Skipper and Iger and these top ESPN executives looked at 2017, and they realized it was going to be a rough year. And so there were a couple of self-inflicted wounds with, you know, Barstool and everything that happened with Jemele Hill. But they knew that they were going to have to absorb this huge NBA contract. They knew cord cutting was happening and it was going to hit on the other side. And I think all of them were saying, if we get past this 1 year, starting in 2018, you know, midway through 2018, you know, things are going to start increasing back again, because by that time they would have absorbed the NBA contract. It's not going to be sort of a new expense on them, and everything was going to sort of work out a little bit better. So the idea that Skipper re-signed for another 3 years doesn't come as a huge shock to me. Doesn't come as a shock to me at all, in fact.
Jim?
I agree with John. It's not a shock. I think that one of the things that we've seen since, 1982, I guess, there's always been a successor inside of ESPN. It's a very difficult place to just parachute into if you haven't been there before. And I think that Burbank made the decision that there was no one inside that was even close. But I also think that they have faith in John and for him to stay around. This was done longer than several weeks ago, and it was not a surprise to the powers that be in Burbank that this happened. I'm not so sure, John, that I agree with you that they think that they're out of the woods in 17. Not that things are going to be, you know, rosy again, but I think that they realize that there are a couple of things that they're throwing against the wall, particularly the OTT strategy, and we'll see what happens with Bantech and other things. But, you know, this is things are in the oven, and they're going.
Oh yeah,
to...
yeah. By the way, what I meant to say was that they saw 2017. It's going to be a rough year, and that they're certainly not out of the woods yet. I mean, nobody knows how far cord cutting is going to go. Nobody knows how this OTT platform is going to progress.
Right, and the other thing that's quite worrisome is they've had the luxury over the past. We've been in, John, you know this better than anyone. We've been in a relatively atypical quiet time in terms of rights. We went through in 12, 13, 14. There was a lot of rights and conference deals and long-term deals and things. Maybe the EPL was shorter and there was a little NASCAR action, but. But we're approaching now, about a year and a half away from serious talks beginning, you know, the trifecta of NFL rights, NBA, MLB. I mean, there's some serious dollars and some college football rights with conferences that are coming relatively short around the corner. Because when you think about the way these companies do strategic planning, they're already baking in some of these things. So they need to figure out what kind of financial strength they have and to be on terra firma before they sit down with these conferences, with these leagues, and to understand just how much money they're going to be able to play around with, or at least that Disney's going to give them to play around with, because it's not like the old days when, I mean, my gosh, what Skipper
outbid. The blank check approach, yeah, exactly.
I mean, they outbid Fox for the World Cup by $92 million. I mean, it was like, you know, hide all women and children. Here comes ESPN. And so those days are gone. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But I think that they believe, to circle back, and I'm sorry for being long-winded about this, but I think that Burbank, you know, certainly Bob Iger, and I think the members of the board believe that, you know, John Skipper understands the dynamics. He's put a game plan into, you know, he's put a plan into action to try and reverse this, and they want to hang out there as long as possible. The Skipper deal actually will now keep him attached to the company longer than Bob Iger has said that he was going to stay.
So, Jim, if they're going to go internally, how would you rank them? I mean, there's Connor Schell, Burke Magnus, Justin Connolly are sort of the three that people mention all the time.
Well, if they're going to go internally. Now, remember, now there's another 4 years. So
right.
That's given them the luxury of also taking someone, you know, Kevin Mayer, Jimmy Pitaro, someone from that they like and recognize in the Disney firmament that can then maybe a year or two we're going to hear about a position that they're going to have in Bristol. And so they get to understand, you know, what it's like there, and that'll be part of the succession plan. You know, this is not going to be a static situation for the next several years. With regards to three there. I mean, look, you know, each one of them obviously is very talented. You don't get to have those jobs that they have now if they're not. And I think each one of them has their own particular learning curve and things that they would need to get experience with and get stronger at before. You know, there's a big difference. John Skipper used to tell the story about when he was number two at ESPN. Whenever he'd go to Disney, he would always forget his badge at the Disney gate, and the guard would, like, not let him in. So eventually they'd have to, like, call, you know, somebody and say, there's this guy, here's his license, this is John Skipper, but, you know, I mean, should we let him in? And then they would let him in. And when he became president, the first time he rolled up to the gate, the guard said, oh, good morning, Mr. Skipper. You know, it's a big difference between that level and the presidency at ESPN. And you got to, you know, John had his own learning curve. George Bodenheimer had a learning curve. So, you know, we got to give it time. But I wouldn't, at this point, I wouldn't rule anything out, including someone coming in from the outside.
First of all, John, Jim's not going to rank those. He's not going to screw around with any of his.
That was an artful dodge.
Yeah, of course. He's not going to screw around with his great sources at ESPN. We all know that. Let me ask you both a question, because this is kind of interesting to me. And again, Jim, I think your information here obviously is correct. If the deal with John Skipper is either essentially done in fact a month ago, 2 months ago. Let's say officially the signatures are not signed, but they have a verbal agreement in place. Could one of you or both of you sort of expound to me why then would you not release the announcement or make the announcement then? You actually take the proactive approach, put it out to the marketplace, as opposed to risking this news coming out so close to layoffs. And this gets back to me with terms of optics. It's just
What do the two have to do with each other?
Because I don't think you want the president of your company sort of re-signing, or at least it being known that he re-signs a long-term deal while said company is laying off 100 people at the same time.
Well, why is that?
I think the optics of it are terrible. I think it makes it seem like there's different deals for the wealthy and the rich and the rank and file.
Is there an option not to have a president of the company because there's layoffs?
No, I understand that, but wouldn't you not want to separate those news cycles so that the news cycles don't come together?
You know what? I'm probably being really stupid, Richard, but I don't see how they're connected from a PR point of view. You have a position of presidency of ESPN, and that is somebody's going to be president of ESPN until there is no longer an ESPN. So whether or not somebody is getting renewed or extended early or not getting renewed, the fact that there's going to be layoffs, I mean, these people who are getting laid off, I don't think they care whether or not John Skipper is getting extended or whether Norby Williamson would become president or anybody else. I mean, the fact is that there's going to be a president and they're going to get laid off. That's, I don't know. I'm not sure.
John, am I insane here? Am I crazy?
You know, I tend to agree with Jim. I think that they're two separate issues. I understand them not wanting to happen at the same time. But one thing I will say is that ESPN and Disney, they have never announced these extensions.
They never do it.
And so to have them actually do it this time would have been unusual, and it would have been a huge step that just doesn't fit with them corporately.
Right. The only time they announce it is when there is actually a leadership change. They announced, obviously, Bodenheimer becoming chairman and John Skipper becoming president. John's last renewal wasn't done. George's renewals weren't done. Actually, Steve Bornstein's wasn't an announcement.
In fact, Jim, let's even pull back and just say, I don't think you've ever seen a release come out of NBC saying Mark Lazarus is extended, or Eric Shanks out of Fox has been extended, or Sean McManus. These aren't typical public PR announcements that are made.
Ugh, both of you are Wall Street apologists. maybe I'm also, in admittedly, also conflating the fact that I never like to see talent resigns amid layoffs, as we saw the last time too. And I haven't talked to a lot of people who were laid off. And on this podcast, Dana O'Neill, a fine college basketball writer who was laid off, said when she was at the company, she had never seen them roll out that many you know, talent announcements than she did after her group had been laid off. So
what if it turns out, and I'm not being a corporate shill here, but what if it turns out that re-signing Scott Van Pelt is actually going to save jobs?
I understand your thesis behind that. Keep going.
Let's play it out. So they don't re-sign. Let's say they don't re-sign Scott Van Pelt, and someone else picks him off because I think he's certainly a legitimate figure in the marketplace. And last time he was up, by the way, he had at least two networks interested in him. So let's just say they don't sign him and he leaves. Now you're in a position where you're trying to replace talent on, as John referred to earlier, one of the more successful SportsCenter airings. And what if that doesn't work? And what if you can't find somebody like him, and all of a sudden somebody, when they're trying to cut some money from the budget, and they say, you know what, truth is, maybe we should just stick with live coverage after live events, and we'll do a shorter digital thing or whatever, SportsCenter late at night, and all of a sudden that show gets the delete button, and the people who work on that show get laid off.
Do you think that was the case with Bayless and Coward going FS1?
Bayless and Coward are a different thing because, well, they're not attached to the SportsCenter franchise, but more importantly, Bayless and Coward are about tonnage. That's about, I mean, Stephen A., that's how they garner those kinds of income, because that's about taking hours in the morning, delivering young eyeballs, and by the way, diverse eyeballs, and for like literally 2-3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And when you're ESPN and you're trying to figure out your schedule, if you have something that works to that degree, you're going to be willing to pay for it.
All right. I'm not sure you guys have convinced me, but you do make – I understand your argument in terms of Skipper, and that's fair. That's a fair argument, and I'd be the first to sort of say that. I will reevaluate my latent or inherent anger towards that, I guess.
Wow, that's a good job, Jim.
Yeah, good job, Jim. All right, John Oren. ESPN announces that they are there's an initiative now that ESPN is going to do SportsCenter for Snapchat, basically, or for those who are on the Snapchat platform. And this is sort of a reshaping or rethinking of SportsCenter, 3 to 5 minutes of personality-driven people, basically, I guess, giving you the update for that platform on what's going on in sports. Katie Nolan's part of that. Cassidy Hubbard's part of that. I mean, it's not really reshaping anything. I mean, if you've ever listened to a sports radio update over the last 40 years, they get 3 to 5 minutes to sort of give you the sports. But obviously what's interesting here is the platform. They're trying to get young eyeballs, young viewers, and that's where they think they can get them on Snapchat. What do you make of this, John? I know you've sort of you've reported a little bit about this and you've looked into it. What do you make of this new initiative?
No, I think it's something that ESPN's trying to do, which they've never done before. Before it was always we're bigger than everybody else, and so if you want to see SportsCenter, you have to come within our environment. With this Snapchat deal, to me, they're finally saying, we are going to go into another environment and we're going to create something that looks nothing like what we have at ESPN, and we're going to create it for SportsCenter. If there's been one frustration that some people have had at ESPN, somebody like Bleacher Report has come in and has become like sort of a de facto cool brand. It's one of the reasons, they went after, the Barstool at 1:30 in the morning. And so what they have here, if you watched that Snapchat yesterday, it was it looked nothing like ESPN. The hosts looked different. They were dressed differently. The way they presented the highlights was different. The one thing that they did with the NFL, because they don't have the NFL highlights, went quote unquote viral. I don't think it went truly viral, but it certainly was on my Twitter feed for quite a bit. So I find it to be pretty interesting that there's been this difference of thought inside Bristol that they finally have to go and create something for Facebook or create something for Snapchat. and not just take a video clip that already ran on the linear TV network or on their digital network and just, you know, put it into one of those two social media platforms.
Jim, a couple of weeks ago, I did 20 minutes with John on his story about sort of inside from the ESPN perspective on the dissolution between Barstool Sports and ESPN and how that final week sort of played out with Sam Ponder's agent reaching out to John Skipper and Connor Schell and how everything sort of floated till they got to the point where, you know, ESPN called up Erica Nardini at Barstool Sports and said the deal's off. I have not talked to you about this, and I'm not sure you've talked about this on a podcast or in other forums, but what did you make of ESPN's initial partnership with the Part of My Take brand and then the ultimate disillusion when clearly there was a group inside ESPN, even if the group wasn't humongous, that let John Skipper know they were not happy with the deal?
I think at the time it was announced, I think I may have tweeted something like, when the Lord wants to punish you, he answers your prayers, or fasten your seatbelt or something, because at the time I just thought that it's a very, very difficult thing to do, to separate a particular show or a particular show on a podcast from its larger brand. And I think that that's part of what happened, which is that they thought they could slice and dice this thing, and so they could take, you know, from that world what they could either have control over or what they thought that was going to be consistent with what they wanted to be, and that the other stuff was, separate, completely parallel line. And I think one of the things that happened rather quickly was that they realized that that wasn't possible. And so for me, though, the biggest takeaway from it all, because we can Monday morning quarterback all we want, but I just was blown away by the announcement by Skipper, because there are media executives that we all know who would have thrown either Burke or Burke and Connor. They would have clunked their heads together like Mo did with Larry and Shemp. How come you guys didn't really deal with this, even though I think in Burke's defense there was a lot of information. They went around to people beforehand trying to set it up. And in Connor's defense, I think he was trying to be part of a team and trying to understand what program he was trying to do. I mean, whatever. But Skipper brought it all on himself. I made the mistake. I should have known. I mean, you know, and I'm not kissing Skipper's butt because I'm happy to criticize him early and often. But my only point is I thought that that was something that's a cultural statement. And maybe it's, you know, without getting into politics or whatever, but regardless of what party you're in, there's not a lot of politicians who Roger Goodell or whoever it is, who's standing up and really saying the buck stops here and I'm going to put it all on my shoulders. I thought that was pretty cool. And, we complain a lot about stuff and then sometimes we let good news travel slow. So, you know, it was a colossal mess up, but I actually kind of dug the way Skipper owned it.
Let me ask you, Jim, because I've already talked to John about this. How do you think this whole situation is not the right word, but everything that happened from the partnership to the dissolution of the partnership, how do you think this impacts, if it impacts at all, Sam Ponder at ESPN? Do you think it changes the evaluation of her with management? Is it just sort of a blip that she, she made it clear how she felt? She made it clear to Skipper, Schell, et cetera. I'm just curious about your read. She has a very high-profile agent in Nick Khan who has some high-profile clients at ESPN, so that's clearly a factor too. But I'm just curious in terms of how you would read the impact on her at ESPN going so public and quite frankly, ultimately having success given that John Skipper did kill the show.
Right. Well, look, the bottom line is it can't. It can't have an effect because they've made a commitment to her. They've given her, as you just said, an important franchise, a very, very visible job. If not one of the, I mean, certainly one of the most visible jobs on the network. And so they're not in a position now. They can't ignore her. They can't be upset with her. All they have to do now is move on and be as supportive of her as possible. there may have been a teachable moment inside there where they would have said, all things being equal, if something like this happens again, let's keep it inside the family, you know, as long as possible, so we can flush it out, because it takes on an entirely different dynamic once someone goes public with it. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's Sam's and everyone else's at ESPN's decision about how they want to handle any disagreements they have with management. But, you know, it was significant. It was impactful. There were other people at ESPN prepared to protest further if the plug hadn't been pulled when it did, which I think was part of also what incentivized the quick action after such a short period of time. So, you know, but they don't have that chance. She's not a marginal player. So they have to be supportive. And they also can't send a signal to the company that if you disagree with us, you're going to be voted off the reservation.
I think that she ended up using a lot of political capital on this. So I don't think that she has a lot left in reserve in terms of doing stuff like this. And I also think that the social media rules that got updated not just with Jemele Hill in mind, but also with Samantha Ponder in mind, because of the fact of what Jim said, she took it outside the family. You know, she went public and aired it instead of trying to affect change inside of ESPN.
I'll leave this to both you guys. Either one of you can weigh in, and it's not connected. It's just only connected because it involves the same person who we're just talking about now. But what do you make of Sunday NFL Countdown's ratings being really down? The pregame shows on CBS are down this year. The pregame show on NBC, Football Night in America, is down. But the ESPN and Fox is up marginally on one and up, I think, 5% on their other pregame show. But Sunday NFL Countdown is down significantly. And while, you know, I there's a correlation between some of the pregame shows being down and obviously games being down, the drop that they're down strikes me as something beyond just the NFL games. There's something at the moment that's not working with that cast, be it chemistry, be it something else.
I think that's the point, Richard.
Go ahead.
This is a tremendous – I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
But I think, look, you're talking about this coming after literally the ESPN institution in Chris Berman. And, you know, there's a lot of people on Twitter who liked to malign Berman and you know, say that he was, past his prime and why is he still doing nicknames and all this other stuff. But at the same time, there was a core constituency, I believe, that, you know, was used to him and liked the dynamic that they had on that show. And so I think it's a bit unfair to compare it only because it is quintessentially a transition period for that show, as opposed to, you know, some other shows. I mean, that have the kind of same lineup and haven't gone through such a massive talent change. So I think that needs to be brought into context. The one that gets me sometimes, though, speaking of Van Pelt and shoulder programming, is I think they still have to figure out, though. I mean, Scott does a great job, but on a Monday night, after the Monday night football game, I mean, a couple of weeks ago I was watching and talking with Carson Wentz from the Eagles, and, you know, Steve Young and, you know, the whole group was there before the game and a little bit after, and then they go right to Scott, and Scott says, you know, Steve Young, a Hall of Famer, says, well, I mean, why not keep Steve Young on the freaking field to ask that question? I mean, no offense against Scott. I mean, and for all I know, Scott wasn't trying to Bigfoot, but I'm just saying that the choreography is sloppy. I mean, we had just seen Steve Young 5 minutes ago. As a viewer, I want to see Steve Young talking to Carson Wentz. What's the point of getting, you know, Steve Young is literally there in Philadelphia, and what's the point of getting him off so then Scott can ask a question quoting Steve Young in a monitor? I mean, I think those kinds of things are still being worked out at ESPN, and sometimes not too artfully.
I'll get to you, John. A couple things that Jim just said. I mean, I am someone who absolutely was not a Chris Berman fan for many, many reasons. But I would absolutely agree that Hey, there goes the microphone in the studio dropping. That's always exciting. But I would absolutely agree that he was destination viewing on that show for many, even as late as 2016. Tom Jackson leaving that show as well absolutely had impact. But where I don't agree with Jim on, John, is I do think you have to look at the chemistry of that show. And when you have those kind of drops, whether it's because of people who have walked away because of Berman or et cetera, I think you're not doing due diligence as an executive if you don't look at that show and be like, you know what, is this the right group heading forward? I mean, 5% drop is one thing. 15, 17% drop is another. And your colleague Austin Karp, you know, tracks this stuff and pointed that out. How do you view it, John? To me, and this again, no disrespect to anybody on that show, they're all individual talents who bring something to the table. But in my opinion, there is something about that mix, Rex Ryan, Matt Hasselbeck, Randy Moss, Charles Woodson, Sam Ponder, that's not working. And I think the audience has made it clear that they don't think it's working either.
Yeah, and to me, it's more than just Berman leaving. I think that the NFL pregame shows, to me, have the feel of the NBA pregame shows at ESPN, you know, before the past couple of years. I mean, there's been so much transition and it's, you know, just a revolving seat of analysts that are getting in there, and so, you know, it's been impossible to you know, forget about the chemistry, because, you know, the chemistry I'm sure isn't good. This is the first year they've been together, but viewers don't even know who these people are. They have only seen Rex Ryan for a couple of months now, so it's not a destination of I need to go see, you know, what this guy is going to say. And if you take a look at what they're doing on, you know, Fox or CBS or even the NFL Network, you know, they've maintained a consistency there that viewers know, and it's like the warm, comfortable glove that they get there. And I want to agree with Jim too. Like the whole idea of, you know, Monday Night Football, taking people to the field, and then there's so many people and you don't know what their roles are or how their roles, and people end up stepping over each other. And it seems to me that a lot of the shoulder programming around the games are is really poorly defined, and I think
by the way,
ratings
they
show
go
that.
To on a Monday night, they go. By the way, they're not going every week, so I find some of their decisions. They didn't go to Chicago, but then they went to Nashville. I don't understand. They're trying to save money, but I don't even understand why they're going to some of the cities they're going to. But more importantly, if you look at 6 o'clock on a Monday night, you know what they start with? I mean, remember Brent Musburger? You were looking live, and one of the things that, you know, the value proposition for that CBS show, it took us, well, not only were they given the weather for Jimmy the Greek's betting friends, but they were also taking us to the arenas, to the games, the latest injuries and everything else. If you turn on Monday night, the pregame, at 6 o'clock, a lot of times, I swear to God, guys, they're looking at Sunday's highlights. And if you're a sports fan, you've already seen Sunday's highlights starting at Sunday afternoon and Sunday night and Monday morning and Monday afternoon. So that's how they decided to start off their show on Monday night, 6 o'clock, when they're live at a new field. I mean, I want to know who's injured. I want to know everything about that game that no one else can tell us better, because they're evidently there. I just don't get it.
One of the things that's always, at least, John, you brought it up in the NBA, that's always sort of been puzzling to me is, especially when they're at the finals or the conference finals, they have their NBA studio show that they do the whole year, and this is sort of their signature show. You know, this year, obviously, it's Beadle and Pierce and Chauncey Billups and Jalen Rose. And for some reason, they bring in, after games, Michael Wilbon, Stephen A. Smith, some SportsCenter people. It's always sort of struck me as odd that they don't push these in the NBA. They don't let the studio show that sort of takes you and defines you for the whole year into the most important part of the season to do particularly the post game. So it gets a little into what Jim is saying, that sometimes they do make some odd decisions. And my sense always is that they have so many mouths that they have to get on, and that there's a lot of competing people who want airtime, and there's a lot of producers, I think, who like certain talents or want to push certain talents. And a lot of times it does become confusing for the viewer. I mean, obviously you can make the law, at least when the NBA comes, there's an obsession with ESPN producers and Stephen A. Smith for multiple reasons. from his availability to salary, that they liked the water cooler aspect of it, blah, 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 blah. But, John, I do find that sometimes, that a lot of times the continuity of all this stuff for those guys is a little bit strange. And I will say this, I mean, we haven't talked about Fox at all on this podcast. At least at this moment, Fox's continuity is great. You watch that baseball show, and you know who's going to be appearing post-game all the time for Fox. It's Burkhardt, Alex Rodriguez, Ortiz, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they fired all their obviously Sports Center type of people, so they don't have a studio show to go back to. But if nothing else, you do know with that network, you know, who's going to be on and who you expect.
You're showing your age by describing it as water cooler talk.
Yeah, because
because producers
Twitter
now,
talk.
Yeah, producers now care about clips that go viral, and Stephen A. goes more viral than people in the studio. So that's I think that it's almost less about contract or whatever. It's about they feel like fans resonate to him. So let's get him on in the most important time. But I think that, you know, the one thing that has worked in television for decades is consistency. And I think, you know, that Fox's, you know, NFL pregame show has been amazingly consistent. I mean, you mentioned the baseball show, which was really good, but it was really good through the season and through the World Series. And
let's
generally don't
see
a lot of changes on those studio shows. And at ESPN, you've been seeing these changes every year. I mean, it's impossible to even know who's on it right now.
Jim, now, I think you got cut out there. What did you say?
I said, and let's not forget the great John Smoltz.
John Smoltz was fantastic with Joe Buck. Jim, are you allowed to talk about FS1 and Fox? Do you want to? I always just keep you with ESPN, but, you know, do you want us to go there? What is your relationship right now with Eric Shanks and John Entz and the rest of that group? It's good?
I try and have good relationships with everyone.
Well, as John Orand and I know, you are the Kofi Annan of this beat. Everyone is... Diplomat City.
No idea what that means.
I don't know what it means either, but it's a good line. That's all I know. Yeah. All right, speaking of Fox, John Oram, we can do this quick. The news came out yesterday from a soccer-based trial involving, I should make sure, like, actually I get this correct so I don't get myself in trouble here. But there's a former CEO of a firm based in Argentina who testified yesterday in a corruption trial in New York that Fox Sports and other broadcasters were involved in a scheme to pay bribes to secure rights for Copa America and other events. As of now, in my reading of this, I don't think this has gotten into any allegations of the World Cup. We all know FIFA is an absolute mess, and no bribes should ever surprise you when it comes to FIFA. But, John, do you have any sort of read of the tea leaves of this, what this may mean for Fox Sports heading forward when it comes to them and soccer? Obviously, you do not want to be a company where you have somebody accusing your company. And again, I understand it's not necessarily Fox Sports corporate in LA, but sort of an offshoot of Fox Sports. But again, you know, you don't want to hear people in court saying that you bribed people to secure sports rights.
Yeah, I'm shocked that there's gambling going on in here. I mean, when they decided to renew Fox for basically the same amount of rights fees for what a World Cup that most likely is going to take place in the United States, I have to tell you that everybody else who wanted to bid on that World Cup told me, you know, suggested that bribery is what's happening.
Wow.
Of course, impossible to report out, impossible to see. Somebody is like on the record now in a court of law saying as much. But I can guarantee you that had that World Cup rights fee been open for bidding,
the
number would have been preposterous.
Jim, did you want to say something? You were saying there's so much cash on the sidelines there.
I agree with John. I mean, that one was one of the great head-scratching moments in terms of, you know, rights deals that we follow because, I mean, look, you know how John Skipper feels about soccer, ESPN alone. I don't understand why they wouldn't want to come to market and really understand, you know, what they could get.
And the worst part about it, or the best part for Fox, it is such a sweetheart deal for Fox. I mean, the rights fees are not that high, and it's going to be in the U.S. I mean, so everybody's talking about how the United States didn't make the World Cup in Russia and how that's going to kill Fox. Well, that's the same contract that's going to give Fox a ton of – Fox is doing so well on that World Cup contract, even with the United States not being in the one in Russia.
Jim, before you jump on, I'll just read this to you, and then you can respond. I pulled up a story from 2015. ESPN and Univision responded angrily Friday after FIFA awarded U.S. broadcast rights to the 2026 World Cup to Fox and NBC's Telemundo without open bidding. That it is almost inconceivable to read that today in 2017. That, of course, takes Fox through to 2026. And as John said, they paid about $425 million for the 2018 tournament in 2022. In a statement, ESPN says, "We were not invited to be involved in this process, certainly considering the high-quality presentation that ESPN demonstrated and the exposure we brought to FIFA events through our platforms. It was surprising and disappointing to learn of this when the press release was issued." So, I mean, John, Jim, incredible to think that, I mean, this was covered very big, by the way, in 2015, but you even look at it 2 years later, incredible that the 2026 World Cup bidding was not up for bid among multiple companies.
If you told me that that $425 that Fox paid, that ESPN was going to pay $650, and remember something, that was 2 years ago, so ESPN's wallet was still a little thicker. It would have been $600 easy. Who knows? I mean, they would have spent a lot of money. And by the way, this is the same network that, as you alluded to, went down to South Africa and, you know, by all accounts, really took both their own production exigencies and the visibility of the games to another level.
Yeah, I don't think anybody. Let's put it this way: I have a little more faith in Fox as we talk today in November 2017 than I certainly would have in November.
This is not against Fox.
I'll finish. I'll let you go. But I was going to say, but there's no argument that in terms of the World Cup coverage that ESPN did, that is gold standard stuff, right up there with the OJ doc and right up with the best stuff they do.
Absolutely. I mean, what more could you ask for, which is, a company that has already proven that it's able to do it, the president who loves the sport and is highly committed to the sport, and they no doubt they'd be willing to spend more dollars. I mean, look, one day somebody's going to write the article or the book that's going to, really trace the pedigree of what happened then, because it doesn't make sense. If it was a public company, the CEO would get fired because he or she wasn't taking care of the shareholders' value.
I think John, again, this is sort of the read, I think, from soccer people, but I think what's clear is that FIFA gave Fox a freebie because of all the stuff, all the negative news that was coming out of Russia and Qatar, particularly the Qatar one in 2022, all the stuff involving Qatar, the weather in Qatar, people dying who were building that stadium. This was, I think, Sepp Blatter is still the head of FIFA, so he's involved in corruption scandals. So that's what's very clear is they basically gifted them a no-bid sale of World Cup rights.
I think it had less to do with Russia, more to do with Qatar and the weather. So they had to move the tournament back to where it's going to conflict with some of Fox's NFL product. This was sort of like a make good for that is how they explained it. But boy, a make good that's going to be worth like hundreds of millions of dollars. That's quite a make good.
And by the way, if I believe as of now, the decision as to where the 2026 World Cup will be next June. And there is a significant chance that it could be in the United States. Can you imagine that this no show bid is, I don't know if it's the right term, but can you imagine that in the end, that Fox getting the 2026 bid without any bidding from other partners, that turns out to be a United States World Cup? I mean,
yeah, I'm not a gambler, but I would bet that it's going to be in the United States. I think it's pretty close to 80% certainty.
All right, let us go back to Jim Miller and a topic he is very close to, and that is Mike Greenberg's upcoming show. I mean, John, I'll be honest with you. I would not be surprised if Jim Miller's being privately consulted on all these decisions.
I'm hearing, right?
Yeah, not only will be the first guest.
Oh, that'll leave him laughing.
He's getting an executive. he's getting one of those silent executive producer credits somewhere in the back. So, Jim, I don't remember if I've talked to you since this was announced even? It was sort of like just a maybe they did officially announce it. But obviously Jalen Rose and Michelle Beadle are going to be two parts of that equation with Mike Greenberg. I think there's still a fourth person coming. There's all these rumors that Damian Woody is a potential fit, Booger McFarland, obviously both.
Oh, I'm sure before it airs, we're going to get the Pope and Lassie on there.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty wide, you know, wide.
Yeah, I'm talking about sort of the main cast, but yes, I agree with you. I think that's if you think Mike and Mike is marketing now, watch out. But what do you make? What do you make of that cast? And I think I know I've talked to you about this before, but both of us know, man, morning television is just a tough game because you're fighting against Today and Good Morning America and CBS. In the era of Trump, you're fighting against CNN and Morning Joe, et cetera. And even though it's not going to draw a ton of eyeballs, Fox Sports One now has its own morning show. The NFL Network has a morning show that draws 150,000, 140,000 viewers in that space. That's not insignificant numbers. So, this is a big deal for Connor Schell, Jim. I know me and you have talked about that. This is his biggest sort of roll of the dice so far. What do you make of all this? Not to mention, I didn't even add that there's a delay from what they initially announced. We're probably not even going to see the show until April or May.
Right. Construction delay, I guess they called it.
Yep.
It's the old expression, they're climbing Everest on a cold day in their shorts. I think that they feel like they need to do things like this. They need to take swings. They need to take chances. They need to mix things up. It's a very, if you just think about it, it's a first, before it even airs, it's a very, very expensive show. Greenberg, Beadle, Rose. That's kind of like a Steinbrenner-esque, lineup in terms of salaries. And so as a result, I think there's even more pressure. If you're going to do Katie Nolan and Snapchat, you see, and it's, as John said, it's a new platform and maybe it works and it's, you got to make the try and, whatever. But this is very high stakes. I'm not sure, they made a decision to bring Mike Greenberg out up front, as a way of announcing the show. And he sat down with Serena.
Yep.
And, I think that the one thing that emerged there was, he doesn't right now. I mean, he had all those years with Mike Golic on the radio and stuff, but there isn't a particular specific kind of, style that Greenberg has in terms of interviewing. It's not, certainly not Letterman-esque, but it's not, we don't even know what that is, yet. And I think that, so they need to figure out, what's going to be compelling, not just hanging out with those people for several hours, but, why do we need to watch it? Is he going to be asking people that is he going to have people on that we're not going to see anyplace else? That's very hard to do. Is he going to be asking questions that no one else asks? Maybe. Is he willing to do that? It doesn't seem like that's part of what he's been about. But if he's willing to change, I just think that the uniqueness of that show is, is not clear yet. And, if you're ESPN, you say, well, of course it's not clear yet. We're not even on. But as the Megyn Kelly situation showed recently, you could have a very talented person, and you have to have your act together. And look, they think they're getting better at Megyn Kelly every week, and for all I know, they are. But she had a tough first week, and that's maybe to be expected, but I don't know what Greeny is going to do with this show that's going to make it, must see television.
Yeah, his sales point to me is that he's affable, and so he's somebody that you sort of want to be sitting down in the mornings with. But like, how he's going to be different than like a Matt Lauer, or if different than like the Morning Joe crew is that's something that they have to figure out.
Excellent points by both of you. First of all, instead of calling the show Get Up, I would call it CAA, personally. That's what I would call it. That's an insider joke there for all the people represented by CAA who are on that show. But here's the thing, and I think Jim hit on it, and John, I know you agree. To me, the way the show's sort of set up is you need the person in the lead chair to be a destination viewing. That's what the show is about. Today and Good Morning America, et cetera, they certainly can sell on news and on guests. But at its core, Robin Roberts essentially is sort of your destination person that you want to spend time with, whether you like him or not. That's obviously the show, the sort of the sell for Lauer. Like Jim Miller, I don't know what Mike Greenberg's sort of destination is. John, you hit it on the head. It's sort of affability was his selling point on Mike and Mike. They built him obviously as, you know, sort of the metrosexual sports nerd with the over the top jock, and that certainly worked in the 90s, and that was a, you know, sort of a good calling card until I feel like radio sort of changed a little bit. But I don't know, you know, interestingly enough, Beadle and Jalen Rose have far more of a chance to be interesting personalities on that show, given where they would probably go. But I think I sat with Jim Miller at the upfronts, and I remember, and Jim, if I didn't, I'd certainly talk to you right afterwards. He had Serena Williams prior to her giving birth. She hadn't talked in what felt like weeks or months. There was so much potential stuff that you could get out of her, even at an upfront ceremony, and it was just vanilla city. You got nothing. And I made a note to myself that if this show is going to be that, you guys have no chance in the hardest competitive time slot on linear television. So I agree with you, Jim. It may rate better than what's on ESPN now, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a successful show against what it's going up.
Yep. Great.
All right. Well, I made such an incredible point. I stunned Jim Miller into silence, which is incredible. Or the likelihood is he's looking at his stock options or his Fidelity account.
Oh my God,
John. Let us since we're going around the horn here. I'll keep you guys for another maybe 20 minutes or so. Would you like to talk about NBA ratings and how up they are? Would you like to talk about NBC's attempts for Skycam and how they're going to sort of change the way games are being broadcast? Would you like to talk about Tony Romo or anything else CBS has going on? Or do you want to go really inside baseball?
I thought you were going to beat me up about my Hollywood Reporter column.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. All right, let's do that. That's good. Yeah. I'm definitely not going to beat you up. I mean, you've already been beaten up. You've been beaten up by the Rich Greenfields of the world and everybody who's saying you put that out there as a favor to an ESPN exec to float it out there. I feel like
did somebody say that?
I feel like maybe Simmons and
Brian
Curtis and Simmons might have said that. They might not have though. I don't remember actually at this point. I have little kids. I have no good
memory. It sounds to me like Richard Deitch is the one who said
maybe
that.
Maybe I said it. All right, so let's
categorically deny that.
All right, so let's. Yeah, I believe you. I don't think. I think you're an independent thinker to me, and obviously one of the great journalists out there. You don't need to be doing the bidding of John Skipper or Burke Magnus, unless it's for a book and a lot of money. Then maybe you do it. I'm kidding, by the way. So don't write me letters here. So Jim Miller puts out and puts out this column in the Hollywood Reporter where he posits, and I thought rather interestingly, that maybe ESPN gets out of the Monday Night Football game business. Now, he doesn't posit that they're going to get out of the NFL altogether. They could still cut a reduced deal for NFL highlights. But he posits out there that maybe ESPN finally walks away from what has been an absolutely crappy schedule. Certainly this year, the ratings are tanking. And so I take
that
back.
Don't worry about it. We got another Miami game coming up.
Yeah, I take. You know what? I should be clear. But prior to this week, they had not tanked. They were actually up. But the Miami ratings maybe brings them down for the year. So, John, I'll go to you before I go to Jim. Jim Miller posits this interesting thing that, like, all right, here's my look heading forward at an ESPN without Monday Night Football, and what would they be? The reason why I don't think this is going to happen is very simple, and I could turn out to be wrong. I feel like you don't want to be the ESPN executive who loses live NFL games. I feel almost there's a hubris there that you would just not want that under your steward. That said, you could save a shitload of money. If you got the NFL highlights, you could still do NFL Live and all that other stuff. So it is interesting, especially given that maybe the next rights deals, you know, we might see the Amazons and the Netflix. How did you view Jim Miller's column?
You know, being on this pod with Jim is like a double-edged sword because he knows more about ESPN than anybody, and so I end up like agreeing with him too much, and so I we need to disagree a little more, Jim.
Yeah, this podcast is annoying because I feel like you two are disagreeing with everything I believe, and you two are you're in cahoots.
Well, this much.
I'll start
this much
disagreeing with myself if you want.
here's where I'll disagree with Jim. I think I saw a tweet that if you were going to make a bet, you're going to bet that they give up Monday Night Football. I agree with all your arguments, but I bet they end up keeping Monday Night Football, and I think they're going to keep Monday Night Football, but their contract is going to look a lot different. And I do think that the idea that they're going to pay twice as much for a Monday Night Football schedule that's not nearly as good as the brand new Thursday night schedule is something that ESPN's really going to fight about, and I think they're prepared to walk. I think the idea, they always used to tell me that, well, it's not $2 billion a year because it's really like, a billion, and then we pay a billion for highlight rights. Well, you can see NFL highlights everywhere as soon as they happen. So the value of those highlight rights are not nearly where they are. So I think that you're going to see ESPN, my prediction is, and anything can happen between now and 2021, of course, but my prediction is that they keep a package. I don't know what that package is going to be. They're going to stick with the NFL games because I think that you can take a look at what happened to CBS when they got rid of it, what happened to NBC when they got rid of it. The NFL TV networks feel like they need to keep the NFL to stay in business in sports. But I think that you're going to end up seeing CBS and Fox and NBC paying rights fees that are closer to ESPN. So there's going to be less of a difference there.
Interesting. Jim, is there anything, let's say if ESPN, I mean, you could obviously sort of throw out your thesis if you want, but I do wonder if there's a part of ESPN's executives, like, that they really, if they do get the NFL again in their next deal, and I don't know how you do this, but to me, the paradigm has to change in terms of how the NFL schedule makers think about Monday Night Football. They just have given it these terrible games. It just, it's a very clear favoritism for CBS's and Fox and NBC's of the world.
Not only that, but it's worse since they signed the deal because now you have that abysmal Thursday Night Football, which is, if you look under greed in the dictionary, there's just like a picture of TNF. It's lousy for the athletes. It's lousy for the game. There's just not enough good product to spread around that. And what it winds up doing is such a clusterfuck, excuse my expression.
There are a lot of curves. I like it.
For Howard Katz, who schedules the games, that now Monday night is literally at the bottom of the totem pole, not just after Sunday night and CBS on Sunday afternoon and Fox afternoon, but now they have to follow Thursday Night Football because I think the schedule suggests that there are times when, Monday Night Football literally, is scraping the bottom. But look, I didn't predict that they're not going to do it. What I did say, though, is that they're not going to – I don't believe that they would ever do it under the same circumstances again and with that price tag. And to your point, Richard, that, you don't want to be the executive who loses it. Remember, everything that we're talking about now when NBC lost it, then NBC got back into it or whatever, you can make a pretty good case that was a different NFL. And, if I owned an NFL team, now I'd sell it. I'd sell it in the next couple of years. Absolutely. Within the next couple of years.
Just because it's like the one business that is always historically just your franchise value always goes up.
I understand. Listen, I'd rather take the money that I've already made on the table now and I think that the NBA has proven itself to be finally an 11-month-a-year sport. There was much more excitement about the NBA at the beginning of the season this year than there was the beginning of the NFL season. The NBA is truly now become much more of a worldwide brand, which is what the NFL was trying to do, and they keep on carting the players off to England in some desperate attempt to try and get that done. And then I purposely ended my column with the story of a 14-year-old boy who I had met, and this was a kid who was a great, great quarterback, and whose parents are now forcing him to become a starting pitcher or a power forward because they don't want him to have brain injuries as an adult. I mean, there are things that are happening. The way that the whole Kaepernick thing has been extended, you look at what's going on now with Jerry Jones and Roger. The NFL, look, I'm not saying football's dead. I'm not saying anything like that. But I'm saying that when you start to talk about being the executive who may lose NFL games, it may turn out that you wind up being the biggest hero in the world because you weren't willing to pay such an exorbitant premium for a product and for ratings that, I mean, they're spending $2 billion and they're getting 11 million viewers for 17 weeks. On what planet does that make sense?
The only pushback that I'm going to give...
I mean, they have the rights fees, but that, you know, I value that. I talked to a couple people. I think I'm about right. Maybe $300 million, $350 of that. It's not another billion, John. It's about $300, $350 million. And I guarantee you, the NFL is greedy enough. If they decide not to get games again, they'll say, here you go, here's $400 million, and we want rights to be able to put on to, you know, SportsCenter and PTI and everything else we need. The NFL is not going to say no to it.
John, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, the only pushback I'm going to give, because I do think that these are conversations. I do know these are conversations that are happening inside Bristol. You know what they should do with it. I know they were conversations that were happening before they renewed the last time. You know, is this something we really need? And is this something that we can live without? There still is, even with everything that Jim just said, there still is a line of David Levy's at Turner and Eric Shanks, if they can find enough money at Fox, you know, with FS1 and other smaller networks that are taking a look at this and saying, you know, this is still a way that we can grow our business because this is still on TV, the biggest programming by far. As all the excitement around the NBA would kill for some of these down ratings at the NFL.
Yeah, it is always fascinating to me. And again, I understand Jim's point, and you know, we could do a 4-hour podcast on like whether now would be the time to sell the NFL. Although a lot of these guys are in this business, of course, because it's one of you're a very special, exclusive club. You know, no one's talking to the guy who's the 40th richest person in the country, but they're talking to Bob McNair and Robert Kraft, obviously, because they own these franchises. I do want to, John, I do want to ask you, and Jim, you should weigh in too here, about SportsCenter. Because, you know, if indeed for these upcoming layoffs we see some of the SportsCenter pool and that talent laid off, and obviously we don't root for that at all, but if that happens, what feels like it's sort of ending up here is that, you know, there are a couple of very, very, very high-profile SportsCenter talents, and then, like, what is the rest of SportsCenter? Is it, like, Cassidy Hubbard and Katie Nolan in this Snapchat universe? Is it, like, you know, whoever's going to be doing the 5-minute update on the new Mike in, Mike Greenberg morning show? It's like, it's so like, given that the show was like the definitive show for me growing up, and Lord knows how many times I've heard ESPN PR people like Josh Krula would say it's the definitive show of record. It's not anymore, but it was. And so, John, I realize this is where we are in 2017, but even still, it's like, it's stunning to me that like, where SportsCenter may be in 2019 is like, you know, 6 p.m., 11 p.m., and then 5-minute updates on some of these personality-driven shows.
Yeah, because I don't think inside Bristol, they're not viewing SportsCenter as a show like you and I do and like we all grew up with. They're viewing SportsCenter as a brand, and they want our kids to view it as a brand to where that's where you go for sports news. And so that's why you're seeing the extension of sports. The first Snapchat they did was SportsCenter. That's why you're seeing the extension, onto social media. That's why you're seeing, you know, these different, you know, the Scott Van Pelt and the Six, you know, type of, although Six technically isn't a SportsCenter, but I guess it's set up that way.
So it's under the rubric. It is.
And so, you know, if you look at it less as a show, and it's just trying to morph with the way video is morphing today.
But, you know, if there's one constant in media, it's change. And so who's to say that, I mean, I think we should be saying is, look, SportsCenter went on the air on September 7th, 1979, first night ESPN was on the air, and it's still around now, which has been an amazing journey. But everything, when Dan Rather was anchor to CBS Evening News, he had a 29 share. The thing was pulling in probably over $150 million in ad revenue. I think that the evening news, you know, newscast now basically break even. They're not money-making operations, which is why, you know, the morning day part is so important. I mean, that's just been a transformation. And, you know, and so ESPN has to, you know, understand that too. And I think they're finally understanding it. I think that they've went through some difficult pathways to get there, you know, and you know, but I think that they certainly get it now. And so maybe there isn't something in 2019 or 2020 that's going to be recognizable to us. But, you know, that's why those men and women are getting paid big salaries, because they better figure out a way to adapt to, you know, a new world order. And that's their job. And their job is to come up with those ideas and save freaking jobs, rather than just, you know, wait till it's too late and then just, you know, fire a bunch of people.
John Oren, do you have any takes on two things here? One, the
potential. I'm filled with takes, Richard.
The potential of Trey Wingo and Mike Golic as a national radio brand, and what do you make of Barstool's announcement that they're getting their own channel on Sirius, which I thought was pretty interesting. Not just a block of shows, not just a block on Sirius, but now they're an entire channel on audio dedicated to Barstool stuff.
I think you and I diverge a little bit, because I think that Greenberg is a much more bankable star than you do, and I think that
on radio or on television.
On radio, we'll see on television.
Yeah, I don't disagree on radio, but go ahead.
I like Trey Wingo's work. I think he does a good job. I don't know what the chemistry between the two is going to be, but I think that's a tall order to follow. Mike and Mike. I think that, you know, Mike and Mike has been it set the standard for quite a while. So I don't expect, you know, the radio ratings to come in, you know, nearly as high as they were, and I don't expect the same kind of buzz as there used to be with that show.
Did you want to comment on Barstool, John?
Barstool, I mean, they got a show on Sirius XM.
Well, they got a channel, not just a show.
Channel. I mean, I understand why Sirius XM wants them to do that. I understand that they want to sort of branch out with their brand. I think this follows in, you know, I mean, if you take a look at how much they've grown since they got an actual CEO that has, you know, business sense, I think, you know, it makes a ton of sense.
Jim, did you want to add anything there?
Look, I think they continue to build out that company. It's pretty impressive, whether you like them or not, whether you agree with, you know, their sensibilities and what they stand for and, you know, whatever. In this day and age, to have the kind of growth that they've had, you know, is significant. And, you know, whether or not it winds up being a credible threat to ESPN or to, you know, other people who are in sports radio, you know, we'll see. But that's certainly a nice beachhead to have their own channel on Sirius.
All right. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I mean, do you want to thank Donald Trump for?
People are sick of us by now.
Do you want to thank Donald Trump for getting those UCLA players out, or anything? I mean, what would you guys like to talk about before we get out? I know. And
they would have been faced with jail for what, 20, 30 years or something.
I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, they.
I'm joking.
Yeah, but I mean, the reality is, given the international press that would have covered it, I don't think they ever would have gone to jail. That said, kudos to Trump and his administration for stepping in and getting those guys home. But I'm just amused by the but that story is now part of a culture war, because I'm sure ESPN and others are getting accused of not covering it, which is not true. I saw it on ESPN's homepage. It's on SI's homepage, et cetera. All right, John, is there anything else you want to hit on before I let you and Jim Miller go? I'm sure Jim is doing Jim, what are you doing today? The Daily, Pardon My Take. What other podcast do you have today? Simmons, Press
I'm actually
Box?
Editing my own podcast.
Oh, nice. Do you want to announce any Origins related scoops for us on what the next subject's going to be?
Well, I got to make sure I can edit it first before I say it.
Now, when is it? Do you know you have a date as to when that's going to come out?
I don't.
Okay. All right. John, is there anything you want to promote?
Yeah, the Origins podcast. How is that doing for you, Jim?
It's a major hit. Jim Miller has a huge hit on his hands.
Well, from your mouth.
And you, I remember seeing you in the studio before it was released, and you did that whole song and dance. Oh, I'm not sure how it's going to do. You know, you're like an indie producer with that nonsense, and you had a monster hit. It turns out you're Bruckheimer. You're not.
Oh yeah. So when Jim, when did you like give a sigh of relief? When were you like, boy, this is really going to work? Was it during an interview? Was it after an editing process?
In a word, never.
You still
I don't,
haven't?
signs of relief. That sounds like something I hope to experience one day.
Getting Larry David and that whole crew together. I mean, as I was doing the interviews, I think I would be like, all right, I think this is actually going to work.
Wow. Well, whatever you're taking, I want some of it, because I was like thinking, okay, this is okay, but now is the next one going to be okay?
Well, I will say this. As someone who is not a big Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, I'm just going to say not a big fan, I don't watch the show, obviously. What you did, I thought that was really smart, though, is you took this program that people are really, really over-the-top passionate about and really, you know, for me, like, I love Game of Thrones. I could hear and listen to and talk about it all day. So you took this program, which obviously so many people are invested in and love to hear, got the participants of it, and knocked it out of the park. So I respect just your choice was, I think, a really smart choice for the first show.
And that's very important because it sets up the next one. I had kind of moved things around a little bit out of necessity, and so the next one is sports related.
Okay.
Coming up soon.
Hopefully, it's how John Oran started in his career.
It's the early days. I got your tax returns, SAT scores, all everything, John.
Nice.
Montgomery County High School football is covering it for the Gaithersburg Gazette. Absolutely.
Is that right? Okay. Is that your first job in journalism? Interesting.
That was my first ever story, and that's when I first learned about the inverted pyramid, because I wrote too long and they just cut from the bottom.
All right, I think producer Lou Pellegrino at this point has taken a cyanide pill. He's at this point saying he's saying it's over.
Mercifully, somebody will probably chop off the last whatever.
Yeah. All right. So let us give all the credentials again. Jim Miller is a best-selling author of books on CAA, ESPN, and Saturday Night Live. You can see his work in many different publications, from The Hollywood Reporter to Vanity Fair. He also has his podcast, Origins, which is part of my podcast network, Cadence 13. He's obviously one of the money people in the business when it comes to analyzing ESPN. We didn't even get into you fighting with Rich Greenfield, Jim, on Twitter, which I really would have liked to get into. We didn't get into Rich Greenfield taking a shot at you on Twitter. I wish we would have gotten into that.
The Moynihan axiom. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts.
I know. You're a professional. You don't really get
it. By the way, that was more than a Twitter fight. I think Greenfield actually wrote a report based on Jim's
I didn't
story.
Engage in Twitter.
So what? So hold on, John. This is more interesting than whatever Jim's going to spin here. Rich Greenfield, he wrote a report off the Miller piece in Hollywood Reporter?
He wrote a report and put it out to all his clients and put it out publicly that basically said that Jim was wrong. And then if you actually read the report, it seemed like he agreed with you more than he didn't. But the headline was much more caustic.
So he's using Jim Miller's fame and popularity to push himself for his clients, is what it seems to me, right?
I think that could be a way to read it. Sure.
All right. Good job. I like that. All right. I must admit, I have a little soft spot for Greenfield, in that I know he bothers ESPN management and PR. So I kind of like that about him, because he's a little bit of a rebel rouser, but he also has some takes he's also always quick, like, all right, it's the end of the world, ESPN's gonna fold tomorrow, which is just nonsense. So I don't know. I don't have to figure out how I feel about him. All right, Jim, is there anything else I need to promote?
Seems like I just corresponded with him on email, though, and seems like a nice guy.
Oh, look at you. One day. Once again, Boutros Ghali, back with the diplomatic stuff.
okay, goodbye.
All right. And John Oran, of course, is the fine sports media reporter for Sports Business Daily and Journal. Although I think now, John, you're the number three guy behind Kevin Draper and Glass Beagle when it comes to who ESPN loves.
You might have dropped the Hollywood Reporter who broke
We didn't even get into that. I mean,
goes
you
to Hollywood. I can't believe that.
Talk about Josh Krulowitz just calling Marissa Guthrie up and giving her like a latte with some delicious milk and syrup. Oh my lord, on that Scott Van Pelt thing. And Norby gets himself a little bit of pub. My God, ESPN PR working overtime. All right.
That was a grande latte.
That was a grande latte. All right, Jim Miller, John Oran, whenever you guys are on, I get incredible downloads, so I can't thank you enough.
Oh, no, thanks for having me.
You guys are basically money in the bank for me.
And so I enjoyed this. Thanks.
And I appreciate that. All right, John Oran and Jim Miller, check out those guys on Twitter. Google their names and you'll see their fine work. Thanks, guys, for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, back in the studio. Let's wrap up quick because, that was long. My thanks to John Oran and Jim Miller for their time. Thank you to Lou Pellegrino for producing this podcast, Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated. Please check out Sports Illustrated Media Podcast with Richard Deitch on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating if you like this stuff and a review. Last couple podcasts, Gino Auriemma, the head coach of the University of Connecticut women's basketball team, who has a very popular podcast out now. Marty Smith of ESPN. Kim Martin of the Washington Post. Chad Millman of the Churning Group. And couple sports media roundtables. Dane O'Neill of The Athletic. And you can go down the list of the people on the podcast. All right, for Lou Pellegrino, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.